Ramsey TV.
Martin Zender here. Hi, everybody. I'm going to solve a lot of problems for you today. Problems maybe you didn't even think you had. Oh, but you had them. At one time, you had them. I had these problems. We have to work these things out. I told you God's big problem and that he's in control of everything. I know I have lighting issues going on here, right? This light. But I want it that way. I told you God's big problem is that he controls everything. He's God, and so, but he still has to, you know, give us creatures experiences and consequences to our actions and things like that. And this all happens for us in real time in that beautiful, gorgeous, luscious thing called the bubble of ignorance. This is better than the bubble that brought Glinda into Munchkinland. Love the bubble of ignorance. Don't want to know what's going to happen today. Don't want to know what's going to happen tomorrow. Just flying away and having a good time in this great bubble of ignorance. Speaking of ignorance, well, we know some people don't realize that God has locked up altogether in stubbornness that he should have mercy upon all. So God is going to have mercy upon the same all that he locks up together in stubbornness. And he's doing it all himself. That's the thing that bothers people. I'm going to get into that today. That some people are bothered that God is doing all this. It's like, where's my part? It's like, well, I don't know. I can't imagine not liking the idea that God has a plan for your life and that all your days were known ahead of time and that all things are working together for good. And the only way that could happen is if God is managing every single event in your life, every single thing you do. That is gorgeous. I love that. It's like staying in a 5-star Hilton. How can anyone not like that? It's beyond my comprehension, because the alternative is that you're on your own. Your screw-ups are not necessarily part of God's plan, and the sovereign of the universe is out there trying to put the pieces together, make the best of things, trying to pick up the pieces, just like the average white band song from 1975, 75, 76. Pick up the pieces, pick up the pieces, Is that God? Is he picking up the pieces of your life, or is every piece pre-fit? Oh, that is gorgeous, man. That's like getting your hotel bed made up every day with fresh sheets. And you walk into the room and there's a chocolate on your pillow. Yeah, and all your stuff's lined up and made neat. And you go into the bathroom, there's no hair in the sink. There's no hair in the tub. No little specks of dust on the floor. Smells good. There's a coffee maker there with packs of coffee. It's a great feeling to know that God is in control of this. What's not to like? The only thing I can figure out, I mean, I tried to put myself in the place of somebody who doesn't want to accept this or can't even entertain the idea. Like, why would God not leave me alone? For some of the time, it's the only thing I can think of, and excuse me, I'm seriously apologizing if this is you, is there's a degree of, I'm sorry to say this, arrogance. Just a degree of arrogance. Like, I want a piece of the God pie. That's the only thing I can figure. Going to get into that a little later here on the show. Now, God is locked up altogether in stubbornness. Now, here's a verse from John that you might have a problem with. When you're explaining to someone the salvation of all, that in God's, it's God's intention. And who can withstand his intention? Romans 9:19. Who can withstand it? Nobody. So this is a beautiful thing. God wills all humanity to be saved and to come to a realization of the truth. And we know that all humanity is saved. 1 Timothy 4:10. Did I say the verse for the first thing? It's 1 Timothy 2:4. And 6, somewhere around there. That's God's intention. God wills all humanity to be saved, come to a realization of the truth. Then you have 1 Timothy 4:10 that says that very thing. That, you know, God's a savior of all humanity, especially of believers. Now, you're trying to talk certain people into that, and they're not getting it. And some of them will put John 3:36 in front of you. Jesus speaking, "The Father is loving the Son and has given all into his hand. He who is believing in the Son has life aeonian." The first problem is when you have a bad translation. Most of your common English translations, the ones you get at the Bible bookstore, are wrong in that they mistranslate the Greek adjective aeonion, which is supposed to be translated aeonian, which is almost a transliteration, brings it right over from the Greek. It's a beautiful thing. It means a period of time. If you translate that eternal, which the King James Version and other versions do, then it screws up God's plan of the eons. I made a whole series on that. Just look up Martin Zender, the eons, and you'll get a great teaching on it that I did in Indianapolis a couple years ago. So let's go on. "He was believing in the Son has life aeonian, yet he who is stubborn," here it is, here's the verse they'll put up in your face, "he who is stubborn as to the Son shall not be seeing life, but the indignation of God is remaining on him." I should probably spend the rest of the show on this. I got other things to do. I don't know what's going to happen here. Let's see if I can get through this. You remember, I just said yesterday, God locks up altogether in stubbornness. Yeah, Romans 11:32. God locks up altogether in stubbornness. So here are some of the people that God has locked up in stubbornness. Who are they? The stubborn people. "He who is stubborn as to the Son shall not be seeing life." But who made those who are stubborn as to the Son? God did. But what's God's promise concerning them? They will be delivered, eventually delivered from their stubbornness. Why? Because God has mercy on the same all upon whom he has made stubborn. Did that make sense? I think I screwed something up grammatically there. This didn't sound right to me. God made everybody stubborn. God locks up, active verb, altogether in stubbornness, that he should have mercy on all. I told you that God has to have the stubbornness before the mercy, because the mercy cannot be known. The mercy cannot feel good unless the stubbornness comes first. But he unlocks all these people at different times. At different times. God is the savior of all humanity, right? As in Adam, all are dying, thus also in Christ shall all be vivified, but each in his own class. So it happens at different times. So just by seeing this word stubborn ought to take you back to Romans 11:32 and tell you that, okay, well, these are stubborn temporarily, and indeed they are. "They shall not be seeing life, but the indignation of God is remaining on them." Yeah, it's remaining on them as long as they continue in the stubbornness. They're not seeing life as long as they continue in the stubbornness. So anyone who is stubborn is not seeing life, and it's the life of the context is aeonian life. Doesn't say they will never see life. That is the falsehood that is read into this. Shall not be seeing life as long. You could add this: as long as they're stubborn, they shall not be seeing life. As long as you're stubborn, you're not going to be seeing any life. That's true. As long as you're stubborn, the indignation of God is remaining on you. That is also true. But to read eternity into this is the mistake. For one thing, we know from Romans 11:32 that God is going to unlock these people eventually. Now look at this word remaining. In this very book of the scriptures, John, the indignation of God is remaining on him. Oh no, it's a terrible thing. Well, the remaining is the incomplete verb form. It's like ongoing as long as the conditions producing it are still in existence, such as stubbornness. And so is not seeing life. In fact, he who is being stubborn as to the Son shall not be seeing life. The word stubborn is actually the incomplete verb form. It shows ongoing action. It just means that it's happening now. It doesn't mean it will always happen, and we know it won't because of Romans 11:32. And a good evidence of this incomplete verb form and that remaining under the indignation of God, remaining under it, that's not an eternal state. In John 1:39, this is a great thing. I might have to get my glasses on for this. You folks have not often see me in my glasses. I try to avoid it. I don't like them, but I got new glasses, but I haven't picked them up yet. But for now, I got to read this. I got to put these glasses on so I can read it. 11:39. Let's start with 38. Now Jesus, being turned and gazing at them, following, is saying to them, "Why? What are you seeking?" This works with my glasses somehow. Yet they said to him, "Rabbi," which is being construed teacher, "where are you remaining?" He is saying to them, "Come and see." They came then and perceived where he is remaining, and they remain with him that day. It was also about the 10th hour. Yet the next day they went to Galilee. And verse 43, I kid you not, this is what happened. On the morrow, he wants to come away into Galilee, and he is finding Philip. So they go into Galilee. Well, wait a minute. It says he's remaining there. Where is he? Where are you remaining? They asked the Lord, "Where are you remaining? Because we want to remain with you." So he was remaining wherever they were. I'm not sure where they were at the time. Doesn't matter. But he was remaining there. He's remaining there until he left. So remaining shows ongoing action, but it doesn't show eternal action. It's just that you're there until you're not there. So these people are stubborn in John 3:36 until they're not stubborn. They're remaining under God's indignation until they're not under God's indignation. They're not seeing life until the time they are seeing life. You cannot read eternality into this unless you do it illegally. It's all the incomplete verb form. He who is being stubborn as to the Son shall not be seeing life, but the indignation of God is remaining on him. Yeah, up until it's not. That's that. Now, there's a theory out there that goes like this, that God allows some things. He doesn't cause all things. Oh, we can't do that. We have to clean up God's resume. God says he creates evil. I don't know. God says a lot of crazy things, you know, in his wild moods. He gets in a wild mood and he just starts, you know, throwing stuff around like, "I create evil. I make good and create evil. I, the Lord, do all these things. I kill. I make alive. I lock up altogether in stubbornness." Like, cool it. Cool it, man. Cool it, man. Have you been dipping into the scotch? Just take it easy. But don't worry. We'll fix it for you. Not all is out of you. Oh, there's another thing God says. All is out of me. All is out of me. You're going a little crazy there. Cool it. So Christians and unbelievers, they like to help God out. And they like to brush up his resume, improve it. And so they're not willing to say that all is out of God, because that would mean that bad things are out of God, that evil things are out of God. And I told you, evil is not necessarily sin. It just means to break. It depends on the motive. So the excuse some people have made up is that God allows certain things. Ooh, I hate that word. I say God causes everything. This is why it's important. If God merely allows things to happen, then he's like one of those here in Florida. We have these fruit checkers. You see, they stand at a conveyor belt, and a fruit comes down the line, and then they look at the fruit, and if the fruit doesn't look good, they throw it out. They allow some fruit to pass, and they don't allow other fruit to pass. If we're going to relegate God to a fruit checker at a conveyor belt with oranges coming down the pike, oh, this orange looks delicious, perfect color, I'm going to let that go. Oh no, here comes an orange, it looks bruised, it's not even orange, it's kind of yellow. Oh, I don't like that one, I'm not going to allow it. Off it goes. Is that God? If so, I'd like to ask this question between me and you. Where's the shit coming from? It's got another source. If God's just checking it, coming by, I'm going to allow that. Oh, not going to allow that. Where's it coming from? It's coming from another source. But God is the source of everything. Exactly. God's the source of everything. So it's coming from him. So you might say, only relatively could God be seen as someone like this. In other words, he's checking the fruit that he himself is sending down the line. Just like he locks up altogether in stubbornness, and then all are coming down the conveyor belt locked in stubbornness. And then as they come down the conveyor belt, God says, "Hey, I'm going to take stubbornness off of you." You notice I don't use the Christian God voice when I'm talking about the real God. "I'm going to take stubbornness off of you right now." That's the action on the stage. That's the relative viewpoint, if you're going to see God as some kind of being who allows stuff instead of causes it, it's only relative. It's not the absolute truth. Is that he's sending all the stuff. Everything comes out of him. There's nothing that doesn't come out of him. So if you're going to tell me that God is an absolute allower, an absolute checker, that is a terrible mistake. It's an awful mistake. It's an awful mistake because you're relegating God to someone who's trying to sort things out that come from some other source besides him. Impossible. Nothing comes except by him. Romans 11:36, all is out of him, including all oranges, pears, apples, pomegranates, and yes, mangoes. They're all from him. They come down the pike. Yeah, and then if he wants to jump in his own universe, which he does sometimes, he jumps in. That's the relative viewpoint. It's a figure of speech called condescension. Then we see him sorting through. I sort through these fish. Some are good, some are bad. Yeah, fish come through the line too. Some are good, some are bad, blah, blah, blah. That's the relative viewpoint. He removes stubbornness from people gradually. Well, yeah, I mean, the numbers are gradual. When he removes stubbornness from someone, he probably usually does it instantly. Like, boom, lights on, like Saul on the road to Damascus. At noonday, lights on. God removed stubbornness from the guy. It didn't take 10 minutes, did it in an instant. But he does it for the human race gradually. Doesn't do it for all classes at once. That's how God does it. And I got a verse here for you on that. Of course I do. It's Job 37:13. But let me warm up to it. This is Elihu talking to Job. Elihu was the smartest guy out of Job's acquaintances. His three friends, so-called. What a misnomer that is. I'm talking about Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite. Those guys were like the three stooges. Morons. They did not speak what was right. God really took him to the woodshed later. Well, anybody from Teman, like Eliphaz the Temanite, sorry, you just can't trust people from Teman. And then you have Bildad the Shuhite. I would not want to be from a place called Shu. That would be an embarrassment to put Shu as your address. I live in, where do you live? I live in Shu. Oh, really? Well, that's nice. I live in boot. I live in glove. I live in pants. You live in Shu. No wonder God took that guy to the woodshed. Then there's Zophar, the Naamathite. I wouldn't mind being from Naaman, but Eliphaz was a smart guy. Eliphaz, you might call this God's opening argument before God takes on Job. Elihu comes up. He's the smart guy. This is what he says. I'm leading up to verse 13. I'm going to have to end with this. I'm going to start with verse 10. I love this. This guy, Elihu, I don't know where he's from. I think he was from like the east side of Manhattan. Not like these other fools. Okay, so by the breath of El, ice is made. Ooh, by the breath of God, of El, that is the subjector, ice is made. And the broad waters become a frozen solid. This is a concordant Old Testament. Love it. This is so good. Indeed, he encumbers the thick cloud with soaking moisture. This is so good. Soaking moisture. I got to comment on this because the rain, right? We know that God sends the rain on the just and the unjust alike. God sends the rain. So I don't understand people who are paralyzed by the idea that God is doing everything. I mean, somebody would sit on the sofa just paralyzed. I can't move. Why can't you move? What's your problem? Do you need some kind of, you know, rub, some kind of muscle, relax, muscle, an actor? No, but it's just that God's running everything. God's in me. God has determined all my days. Yeah, so that sounds like great news. No, it's terrible news. Why? Because I can't move. I can't do anything. I don't matter because God's in control of everything. I don't matter. I have no energy. Why should I even move if God's in control of anything, of everything? I don't understand that because to me, it would be just like sitting in your car and here comes the rain and the rain comes from God. Even Elihu knows that. He encumbers the thick cloud with soaking moisture. He sends the rain on the just and unjust alike. It would be like sitting in your car, rain pouring down on your windshield, and you're sitting in your car, you're ready to go, and somebody sitting next to you says, why aren't we going? I just can't move. I can't do anything. What do you mean? Just start the car and put on your windshield wipers. I can't. Why? Because God is sending the rain. That's God sending that rain. So, who cares who's sending it? Just start the car and go. We need to go. It doesn't make sense to me. It's not fatalism. It's almost I would call it stupidism, because you're paralyzed. Why would anybody be paralyzed by the fact that God is doing it? God's sending the rain, but that doesn't paralyze you in using your windshield wipers. I always use that example. I think it's a good one. You use your windshield wiper. You're not paralyzed. I can't do anything about that rain. Why? God is sending it. God is sending it. I can't do anything about my life. Why? Because God is running it. God has organized it. God has designated it beforehand. God has numbered my days. He knows my heartbeats. Remember those people I told you? They came to the understanding that God had numbered their heartbeats, so they sat around and didn't move much. Why? Why did they do that? Because we don't want to use up our allotted heartbeats too soon. That's not fatalism. That's stupidism. I don't understand it. You just go. You just do it. In the bubble of ignorance. You just act. Knowing that God is doing it. I just don't understand the incongruence there. 20 minutes. Oh, Lord. Okay, so I'm going to finish quickly here. It's from the chambers comes sweeping whirlwind. El makes the ice frozen solid. Thick cloud. He scatters his lightning cloud. He directs them round about, turning according to his strategies, that their deeds be all that he instructs them. I'm running through this. Every line of this is beautiful. This Elihu guy. Frickin' genius. Verse 13. Whether it be for a club that he fulfills his approved plan, or for benignity, it is he who causes it to occur. Causes, that's the main word I'm talking about. That word is in dark face type in the concordant version of the Old Testament. That means it is in the Hebrew. He causes it. Whether it be for a club that he fulfills his approved plan, or for benignity. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. That is goodness. Whether it's for a club, that is to bring discipline, or whether it's something he does that you like, he's blessing you with wonderful things. It is he who causes it to occur. This is the absolute viewpoint. This is Elihu from the Upper East Side. This is a smart guy. He says, he uses this great word, and God loves it because God doesn't criticize this guy. He criticized the Three Stooges over here. But Elihu, who says it is he, no matter what happens, good or bad, good or evil. Job says the same thing at the beginning of this verse, this book. Should we accept evil at the hand, good at the hand of the Lord and not evil? Elihu, same thing here, whether it's good or for evil, it is he who causes it to occur. That's Job 37:13. Sorry for I keep bringing you scriptures and making sense for a living, but that's just the way it is.